Okay, and speaking of requests that may take longer than 3 days, all of our members at this point have experienced a trade data request and communications requests from us. But one thing I want to focus on here is our exam program moving to targeted requests. So I hopefully, or as you'll be seeing in the coming exam rounds, we're focusing more on specific trading desks, smaller periods of time, as we found that we can get just as much value in those smaller, more targeted requests as we would for a bulk request. But starting here, the trade data request really serves an important purpose within the exam. It's important for scoping the trades we select for our trade reconstruction samples. So while we do understand that it can be a bit of a sometimes a longer process to pull our trade data requests, it is an integral part of getting our exam work on time that we get that turned around in a timely manner. So again, we can begin our scoping. One note, if you have a question or want to take a specific interpretation of one of our trade data template fields, please communicate up front. One of the worst outcomes is when we get a trade data request and it takes our exam team a couple of days or a week to realize that there's a material gap or there's information that we can't understand. That can start the process over again and lead to material delays in the exam. I'll focus too on a couple of key fields that I've had the most conversations about, I'll say, on my exams, and these are the sales markup, trader markup, and day one P&L. These all serve as a proxy for our exam teams to understand the profitability of a trade and how the firm is viewing the profitability. If we're not using the terminology, or if there's something unique to your business, thinking like a prime broker give up model where you're not tracking this, have that conversation with us up front. But I would say our position is that if you have a separate trading and sales function, that sales group is going to be tracking the markups on those trades, and we consider that a business record. Moving on to communications. Again, we are trying to keep these targeted. Even we realize how frequently traders and salespeople are typing away in Bloomberg. And so even a targeted request can result in tens of thousands of files getting turned over. But again, these bulk requests are, and our ability and the exam team having the time to process these communication files on our side are a key part of every exam, and significant delays are something that can be noted as a potential report item, especially if they're, again, causing those material delays to the exam team's work. Jump back to pre-trade communication. So this is a key aspect of our trade reconstruction exercise we conduct on all swap dealer exams. It's a very useful tool. We oftentimes will, we can uncover gaps in surveillance. We can uncover gaps in record keeping. And so just to, as you know, that we're going to be coming in and conducting these trade reconstruction exercises, we think it's a best practice within the industry to conduct those on your own, and not just random samples, but thinking about the different communication methods your APs use and the different branch offices you might have. So we'll be coming in. So as you know, as you realize that we're coming in, please get ahead of us and go ahead and conduct those exercises yourself. Now, moving on to communication throughout the exam, we are committed to transparency. We don't want to reach a closing meeting or issue a report where there are any surprises. To that end, all of our exam teams are utilizing a potential report item tracker. This is where we will post any potential findings, and we want to do that as soon as possible once we think we have our facts together. And there's two key reasons here. One is sometimes we don't see the full picture, or maybe we don't understand what we're reading. So it's an opportunity for our members to come back to us, give us more context, let us know whether there's truly a non-compliance issue there. If there is, That's when we, again, with the early communication, we want to give our firms time to start with remediation. At the very least, come to us with a remediation plan. And this is something we do take into consideration when we're considering whether a finding is belongs on the report or not. And oh, one last note on the pre-report language, we try and keep our potential report item write-ups limited to the facts. So don't get too caught up on the language or try and start negotiating what could ultimately appear on a report, because really we're just trying to get an agreement on the facts as we understand them. All right, Laura.
As the exam begins to wind down, you'll receive the management representation letter towards the end of the exam. This needs to be reviewed, printed on firm letterhead, signed by a principal, and received back by the NFA prior to the exam report issuance. During the exit or the closing meeting, we will typically summarize all of the exam findings, regardless of whether they are in the exam report or not, and as well as discuss the corrective action that may be planned or have been obtained and reviewed during the course of the examination. And typically, the exam report will be issued shortly thereafter. We do require a firm response for any exam reports with findings. Those do have to be received within 15 days, and they should outline and discuss pretty much every finding and all of the planned corrective action. We do acknowledge, right, that during the course of the examination, it may be very difficult for some corrective action to be implemented or finalized for potentially more process-heavy changes. So the exam report response should typically contain either, or excuse me, both of the interim solutions. So what is being done today to correct the issue, and what is the long-term plan if there's a system kind of fix?
One of the best practices.
I think we've talked about this a few times already. The real goal or hope for this is if you ever have any questions, please reach out. Please communicate with the NFA exam team. We are happy to coordinate and resolve any questions that you may have about exceptions, requests, et cetera. We're trying, I think, to get these exams done as quickly as possible so that we're out of your hair, I would say. And so any delays in responses to requests, just further delay the exam process and put us under a little bit further of a crunch time. So again, if there's any requests for extensions, please ask. We typically try to schedule weekly standing meetings with our firms when we're during our like prime exam time. That may be moved to twice a week, that may be moved to every other week, kind of depending on how the exam is progressing. And we just ask that we have key stakeholders on our calls when necessary to go through processes, specific requests about exam documents or files. Typically, what we're kind of hoping is to hash out anything on the calls that we can, as opposed to having, right, like potentially weeks of back and forth emails with firm contacts. And it's easy. We should hopefully be able to answer, right, questions that are kind of broad or around what happens when X, as opposed to can you explain like this specific disposition or this specific adjustment? We understand that those may take some research. So.
Yeah, I'd like to emphasize that last point. I think one red flag for our exam teams is when we see compliance acting as a go-between and there being repeated breakdowns in communication between our compliance colleagues and their and the support functions within the firm. Repeat requests you can expect to be getting in your coming exams. Trade data I already talked about and the common discrepancies there. Supervision templates. So starting about a year ago, we rolled out a new approach to testing supervision controls and processes. Here we're in addition to examining our firms, we're also looking to get a horizontal view across our firms to try and establish industry standards across things like trade surveillance, communication surveillance, monitoring for unauthorized trading. So, in that vein, again, don't guess at what we're referring to. We're really looking to have these as standardized documents and try and make your lives easier on the follow-up exam by just flagging changes since the previous exam to us. And then communications, I'll speak here to a best practice. So when we issue our communication requests, usually focused around a handful of APs, and the I guess the headaches that that causes to your IT partners, write down the procedures you use to capture the communications from different communication methods your salespeople and traders are using, so that the next exam, you're not reinventing the wheel. If we are seeing, while we understand that some of our requests are going to be a heavy lift, that should, if you can anticipate that coming, and we had a problem on the previous exam, we're going to take a very dim view if that's happening exam over exam. So do take the lessons learned from that first communications request that gives you trouble and make sure you're establishing the processes and getting the key stakeholders involved the next time around early on. And then lastly, One of the benefits of NFA membership is we're here to take your calls. So any questions you have, you know, we try not to act as consultants, but we are here to talk. We know there are great areas in NFA and CFTC rule areas and how your firm's processes to be in compliance kind of fit there. So we're here to answer your questions. And then secondly, we do very much appreciate hearing about material noncompliance issues prior to reading about them in an annual report, and certainly prior to issuing a preliminary questionnaire and hearing about them in the first time. So we will not consider that self-reported if after an exam has started that you then provide give us the heads up about a material noncompliance issue. So did you just want to flag that. All right, common exam findings, Laura.
All right, we're going to start with capital and margin findings that we've been seeing recently. I would say that the bulk of the capital findings that I've been noticing lately are related to the completeness of positions in the firm's capital charges, whether that's the credit risk weighted assets, your risk margin amount, or your market risk charges as well. We're seeing, I think, in a lot of instances that the portfolios or counterparties are not all being considered within the various capital requirements. The other piece is a failure to take appropriate standardized market or credit risk charges. I think we're seeing a lot of improperly classified counterparties or depositories, and then some incomplete or inaccurate calculations as it relates to the standardized charges. You can go to the next. And a few risk management findings. In terms of senior management, the governing body did not adequately or timely review the risk tolerance limits, and the RMU does not report to senior management, independent from the BTU. I think a lot of this is stemming from just kind of a lack of sufficient governance. When the RMU was potentially established, we're not necessarily seeing that it was implemented appropriately. You can go, I think, the next one too. Split these up. And then the second is just a general failure to follow the risk management policies and procedures. Procedures are not reasonably designed to identify or escalate exceptions to risk tolerance limits. We are not seeing procedures designed to monitor or manage the risk associated with swaps activities. And then a failure to consider whether new products would be a material entity-wide risk change.
So moving on to system outages, this has been a bit of a hot topic with our exam teams lately. We understand the industry has outages that stem from a variety of sources. It can be a third-party vendor updating their software. It can be inadvertent gaps in some sort of internal capture and retention uplift. But we think about system outages, especially with communications, on a sliding scale. So first, did the firm detect the outage themselves, and were they able to recover their records? So if it's the NFA exam team discovering an outage through either our communications requests or a trade reconstruction, to us, that's the worst outcome. That's a big red flag for us. Whereas identifying the communications outage yourself, being able to retrieve the records, and then being able to process them through your communication surveillance systems again. To us, we don't expect perfection from our firms. So if it seems to the exam team like the system worked, you caught the outage and were able to remediate the problem timely, we're not going to consider that an exception. We're going to consider that you having the controls in place to detect. And similar with trade surveillance systems, again, a system update and trades aren't being processed for some amount of time. Considerations here also are the length of the outage. How long does it go undetected? And again, whether it was discovered by the exam team or the firm's own controls picked it up. Okay, now surveillance gaps, the common thread here is kind of a a failure to set up the system, I guess, to cover, and you just can't see the laundry list up here, all offices, APs, communication methods. This one in particular, many trading venues will add communication functionality over time. So it's something that it can't be a set it and forget it approach. It's rather something that needs to be part of a regular look back. But here again, we understand that new businesses come online, there are new methods for training, for trading. And so here again, we want the firms to be identifying these gaps themselves, not coming out of an NFA exam finding. And to the extent there are challenges, these could be regulatory challenges outside of the US. They could be challenges because of a particular way of trading that maybe the firm's legacy systems aren't equipped to handle. But in any case, we don't expect the same solution for all APs necessarily or all products, but to the extent there are gaps in a systematic coverage, we do expect the firm to think about what manual or other kind of remedial efforts can be put into place, either on a temporary basis as a systemic solution gets set up, or on a permanent basis if there's, you know, for example, a very low volume of trading and it could be handled by a manual review. SDR. So obviously, this has been on our common exam findings for as many workshops as I've been to. But one thing to note here is that, you know, we are mindful of the new materiality threshold the CFTC set for reporting to the DMO. So it's something we're trying to incorporate in our own as we're considering how high of a risk to put on failures in this space. The swap data verification, the problems here are really stem from kind of a failure to address the rule and the requirements kind of out of the gate. We do understand your IT partners are, they're overburdened, they're getting pulled in a lot of directions. It can be tough to get to the top of their priority list, but if, especially if we're finding a repeat finding in this space, it's something we are still raising. And then failure to report timely, again, we're seeing improvement, no question, but a complex multi-leg commodity trade that takes 20 minutes to enter in, that's something the exam team is going to be reasonable about. But we start by looking at broader metrics. And so if overall there's a material number of late reporting or trades that are reported late, that's something, again, that can appear on an exam report. All right, I'll stop there. Any questions? Or who has the first question, maybe?
Good morning. Thank you. I just wanted to follow up on two points that were made. Number one, there was a point made earlier about compliance being used as a go-between between the NFA and the business being looked on dimly. And then secondly, you mentioned self-reporting mid-exam. The CFTC and the DOJ have both recently, in recent months, released new advisories on self-reporting. So I wanted to understand how the NFA viewed those and if the NFA will similarly be making any changes to its self-reporting standards. Thank you.
I'll take your second question first. So I think it's always been our practice to consider self-reporting. So come, you know, alerting us to a problem before we discover it or read about it in the newspaper. And I mean, we've always thought of that as the system working. Again, you know, we don't expect our firms to be perfect. So we're, as problems occur, and especially as material problems occur, reaching out to us, you know, we're not going to hit you over the head with your self-reported. So I don't think that there's really, I think that was our always our policy. So I don't expect any changes there. And then to compliance acting as a go-between, we do understand that's the role. But I would say when there are repeated breakdowns in communication between a stakeholder and a stakeholder who has to either provide information or provide a response to a document request, when the exam team time after time is having to leverage have to go back to the compliance to then go to the key stakeholder, and there's that breakdown of communication. I think Laura said it earlier, it's better to have those stakeholders on a call, you know, as soon as possible, and especially as soon as there's a question or if, you know, we've put in a request that's confusing.
Hi, yes. So you mentioned system outages and firms identifying said system outages. What would you be looking for in terms of documentation around the outages and how we remediated them and police surveillance?
So I think some of the questions we asked, this might help answer your question, are how was the outage detected? So I think one of the best practices we've seen is some form of a green light that this office or this communication method is being captured. So, you know, if that's, so that would be something we would like to see. We are also going to need, to the extent records are retained, but not maybe processed by a communication surveillance system, we're going to be looking for documentation to kind of evidence how long that outage had occurred. And then I guess finally, to the extent, if the records can be recovered, they can be processed through a trade surveillance or a communication surveillance system. We're also going to be looking for documentation supporting that those records were, I guess, reprocessed, and any other remedial steps that are taken. We want documentation of that as well. So, for example, a system uplift. Sorry, Laura.
I would also like to add in the preliminary questionnaire that you will receive like an Excel file with templates that has a high level description of what to include for any outages. It includes like the length of time, the estimated number of communications, whether those have been re-ingested, and just kind of you can provide a high level overview of any of the outages there. And then exam team, so we'll come back and ask more detailed questions on the back of that.
But we won't leave you guessing. We'll ask you. Yeah.
With regard to the more like voluminous requests, such as the trade blotters and the counterparty lists, is the NFA considering establishing like a standardized template that can be used across all exam teams so we can establish a, you know, more efficient process for pulling this in a more timely manner?
We do have some templates, again, in the Excel files that you'll get with the preliminary questionnaire. As it relates to making changes to that, I think we're always open to feedback as to what would help going forward. And we can also, don't want to say that we're going to be, you know, customizing all of these templates, but if there's a specific format that works for a specific firm, I think that we're happy to take that and carry that forward from year to year.
Great, thanks. I just had a quick question about timing. And by the way, between the final exam report and the preliminary exam report, much appreciated. The NFA has always worked with us to remediate anything really quick and not end up on the final report. So that's very appreciated to clarify things. But with respect to the management rep letter. Well, by the time the management rep letter is signed, there's no more production, right? Is that generally how the timing works? Or ideally?
Ideally, yes, that is how that should be working, yes.
Gotcha. And is it 150 days from the kickoff to the end? Or is there a timing?
Our time frame is to issue the exam report 150 days, within 150 days from the engagement letter issuance.
Right. Got it. Thank you.
Sometimes that falls on weekends, and so you only get 148, though, just an FYI.
Hello. For firms that are global or are domiciled outside the U.S., oftentimes during exams, there could be some delays either due to coordinating with global teams or there can be non-U.S. privacy concerns with the data that we're providing. What would you consider kind of the best practice communication to kind of smooth that over and not cause any friction with the exam teams?
I'd say letting us know when you become aware of those problems. We have enough experience with our non-US firms now to realize there are certain jurisdictions that present unique challenges, and that applies to record keeping systems too. Some of our global members will literally have different supervision and surveillance systems depending on where the offices are located. So it's something we understand, but it's when a request is almost due or past due that we're learning about a problem that the firm was aware of very early on. That's again where we're going to be. That'll be more of a problem for us.
We also understand that there's some time, like timing issues in terms of, right, your European or your APAC counterparts are likely not in the office at 3 p.m. Central when I'm potentially coming up with a question for you. So we will try to coordinate with the firm to make sure that the daily kind of request tracker is sent on a timeframe that works best for the exam team, whether that's an end of day situation or a morning. And we do try to coordinate right due dates around that. So just again, as Corey said, as soon as an issue, you're aware of a potential delay, just please let us know.
One other note here is don't suffer in silence. Let the exam team know where your pain points are coming. Where, and we do try and be reasonable. And you know, we have a generic we've been using the 72-hour turnaround, but that's nothing set in stone. So we again, depending on the request and any unique challenges to your firm, you know, we just want to hear about them.
Yeah. Hi. Thank you for taking my question. I wanted to ask about the recent rules, NFA rule submission on swap valuation disputes, and whether we can get clarity on if the foreign swap exemption applies to non-US counterparties that are also swap dealers. I understand that, you know, when a non-US branch is trading with a non-US counterparty, those are, you know, applicable to the exemption. But, you know, if the firm is also a registered swap dealer and an NFA member, does that exemption apply?
That's a good question. Let me turn it over to our VP, Mike Hyde.
We can get back to you on that specific question, but what the NFA changed to its interpretive notice around swap valuation disputes was designed to do was to have our swap valuation dispute requirements to apply exactly the same way the CFTC's cross-border requirements apply. So I presume you've worked out within your firm how you would apply that for compliance with CFTC rules, then it should be exactly the same for us. But not having the language right in front of me, I don't want to hazard a guess, but it's meant to mirror exactly what the CFTC rules require.
I was wondering about repeat findings. What are your expectations? A lot of the themes we are seeing here on the slides have been presented over the years. So how do you look at areas like, for example, trade reporting, when there might be only like minor deviations, but still coming up time over time during the exams?
So a couple of considerations to repeat findings are, is the root cause the same? Was the remediation plan more of a Band-Aid than an overall solution? So if we're seeing repeat finding, so maybe I can use some examples. So if we see a repeat finding exam over exam, and it was because the firm didn't engage in a like fulsome remediation process, and rather was just kind of fixing the whatever problem the exam team found. So that's something that's going to lead to a report certainly saying like, this is a repeat finding. Something like on late reporting, and if the instance in the first case was a system issue, and in the second case, it's because one trading desk just got out of the habit of entering their trades in right as they occurred, you know, it may not appear as a repeat finding on the report. Or at least might not be called out as a repeat finding on the report.
Hi. One question is on the one of the requirements on timeliness booking for the trade. I know it was one of the focus on the NFA exam. There's been some conversation when it comes to the challenges of defining the ASHTP across SS class, especially on the commodity. When it comes to complexity of a certain trade, it did come up. And so I don't know what's your view and experience when it comes to this topic. Is there a way that or change potentially or discussion or flexibility when it comes to the definition of ASCP for timeliness booking across SS classes?
We're committed to a reasonable approach. It's hard to generalize, I think, because there are different reasons why there are different very good reasons why a trade may be, you know, later than a window we're looking at, or that might typically be considered ASATP. But again, your comment about commodity trades, you know, that's one that we see quite often. There can be, but essentially just give us, we're going to listen to you. We're going to hear you out as to why. But we see it as a trend, as we're looking at all of a firm's reporting, that's when we're going to be leaning more towards flagging as a potential report item and looking for a remediation plan. But again, our exam teams want to be reasonable. We understand there's different reasons why a trade could be reported late. And we do understand too, there's one-offs that, and again, if the broader picture looks good, you probably won't see that on an exam report.
Hi. So I know earlier in the presentation, you mentioned that you're going to focus on targeting certain desks, for example, for trade data and communications requests. I mean, maybe this is obvious, but how would you determine which desks or products to determine?
So that could be an approach, but I'd say one thing we try and capture as we're issuing the preliminary questionnaire, looking back at previous exams, thinking about the higher risk areas of the firm, that's one approach we could take. I'll give you an example. If there's a new product being traded, if the firm's onboarded a new metals desk or something, that might be something that would pop on our radar. Some of our firms, just given their volume of trading, we might just do a bulk request across all APs, just depending on the amount of volume that the firm is trading. But that's one method for getting a more targeted review. But that is something we're committing to on future exams, is not a bulk, kind of three months of trade data for all firms. So that's what we're moving away from.
Hey, just in terms of the timeliness for trade reporting, is the NFA still using the 15-minute standard, understanding that there may be circumstances that push it outside of that standard? Or is the NFA taking a more facts and circumstances approach?
So if systems are designed to report the trade ASATP, even 15 minutes is going to be long, with the exceptions of complex trades, multi-leg trades, or there's been some other reason. I don't want to say that we're using that 15-minute standard, but it's certainly if something's over that for a plain vanilla trade that we see the type of trade that's frequently popping up on our firm's trade data, such that it's impacting the overall, percentage of trades reported on time, that's what we're going to start focusing in more. It's not like the 15-minute is really driving us in this regard.
Thank you so much, Corey and Laura, for a great
session. Thank you all. Thanks for the great questions.